For a moment at the beginning of this decade, it appeared it might be possible to reduce the flood of refugees around the world. United Nations peacekeeping missions helped 2 million refugees return to Cambodia and Mozambique, and more were expected to go home as former Cold War battle zones grew quiet. But then new conflicts started, unexpected civil wars, and unimaginable ethnic genocide. Suddenly, there were new waves of refugees, and the world was less inclined to help. This week, NPR's Ann Cooper will explore these changes, beginning today with a report on post-Cold War attitudes toward refugees.
No one seems to have known this would happen. The Cold War ends, new violence begins, more refugees are set adrift in a world that didn't expect them.
The largest exodus in history, with 600 refugees crossing the border.
This is unbelievable. It's far worse than Tanzania. They're just coming from every single direction. There's nowhere to put them. They're all crowded.
Thousands of refugees already have sought shelter in the snow-covered mountains of the Chechen Republic.
Thousands of tired and hungry Liberian war refugees were finally allowed to leave a freighter that had been stranded at sea for 10 days.
Kurdish refugees from Iraq wait in the mountains while nations argue over who should take responsibility.
People are just dying out there. They're just dying out there.
So many refugees have poured across so many borders in recent years that the world's response now follows a fixed routine. First, relief agencies arrive with food and medicine. Then, if the crisis is big enough, television moves in to beam the drama around the world. If it's really big, politicians like President Clinton may send their armies to help out. Ray Wilkinson, a spokesman for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
The American aircraft coming in and the cameras there rolling and the boys roll to the rescue again. This makes everyone feel great, you know, and Clinton can bask in glory and the troops feel good about themselves, etc.
But eventually the TV cameras will go away. Other crises will distract the politicians, and all that will remain are some relief agencies and the displaced people. By the United Nations count considered conservative, the displaced now number 27 million worldwide. That's almost enough to fill four cities, each of them the size of New York. This is the business district of Magunga Refugee Camp in the Central African country of Zaire. 700,000 people from neighboring Rwanda shelter in this region under the care of the UN Refugee Agency, known by its acronym UNHCR. UNHCR was created in 1951 for a single job, to resettle Europeans displaced by World War II. No one expected it to still be around 45 years later, running a worldwide bureaucracy that manages semi-permanent cities full of refugees. Jean Nsenga, the refugee proprietor of one of Magunga Camp's dozens of bars, is confident that UNHCR will be here for a long time.
I think that UNHCR cannot stop, because it is his objectives, his aim, to help we refugees. Refugees in the camp will not go back to Rwanda because of lack of security. If there is no security, we can live as many years as possible here in Zaire.
The Rwandans have already lived more than 2 years in Zaire, and they show every sign of becoming yet another long-term refugee problem, like the Afghans, the Liberians, the Iraqi Kurds. International donors are weary of financing refugees who can't or sometimes just won't go home. But the only way donors like the United States will get rid of the cost, says UNHCR's Ray Wilkinson, is to start solving the complex problems that keep refugees in exile.
The crisis of yesterday's headlines is a forgotten crisis. Who even knows about Rwanda anymore? Who cares about Rwanda? And that's probably the major problem. We've stabilized the situation, we're feeding these people, we're keeping them alive. But as you say, other things need to be done now to move that process forward.
Other things that might resolve a lingering refugee crisis include new peacekeeping operations or long-term development aid. But these are not in political fashion right now. More important, refugees are no longer a tool for cold warriors. To understand how that's changed things, look at what's happened with two refugee groups from two different eras, the Bosnians of the 1990s and the Hungarians of 1956.
In the Hungarian situation, you had a clear, almost Hollywood version of a country that had, part of its society had risen up to throw off the chains of its oppressors.
Bob Devecki is president of the U.S.-based International Rescue Committee.
They had a brief period of freedom with their own government, which was then crushed by Soviet tanks, and the borders were sealed by Russian soldiers. It was clear that they couldn't go back.
It was also clear that the 200,000 Hungarians who managed to escape were powerful propaganda for the Cold War. Within 6 months, the United States and other Western countries had given all of them permanent new homes. But in the post-Cold War world, there was no blanket welcome for the Bosnians. They were encouraged to stay home in so-called safe havens, where many were slaughtered. Some did get temporary asylum. 300,000 Bosnians are in Germany, for instance. But now Germany wants to send them home, even though there's nowhere to put them. Judy Mayotte is a consultant to the U.S. State Department on refugee issues. She says that during the Cold War, anti-communism clarified Western attitudes toward refugees.
There was an ideology. Today, there is not an ideology that is driving us anymore. We're just simply seeing things erupt, and we think, well, why does that have anything to do with our national security? I think we're blind.
Attitudes are complicated by the growing recognition that not everyone in a refugee camp is a refugee, as defined by international law. The law says a refugee is someone fleeing a well-founded fear of persecution for his religion, race, nationality, or politics. But when exhausted people arrive by the tens of thousands in a camp like Magunga, it's impossible to screen them individually. So the whole population is accepted as refugees. On Sunday mornings, Rwandan refugees throughout Magunga camp hold services at open-air churches. These barefoot parishioners seated on pews of volcanic rock sing of repentance. It's a traditional hymn that does not mention the horrific 1994 genocide that triggered the Rwandan refugee crisis. In this camp are men and women who committed genocide, then joined the refugee flight to Zaire. UNHCR's High Commissioner Sadaka Ogata says her agency can't single out the killers, so it gives aid to everyone here.
I have no legal authority to arrest them. Our mandate is to protect refugees. And if there are 2 million people who have clearly crossed borders and are in camps, we cannot really give up our very main obligation to protect them.
But the moral ambiguities of aiding the Rwandans pushed some private relief groups, including the International Rescue Committee, to leave the camps in Zaire. IRC President Bob Devecki says it was an unprecedented decision for humanitarian agencies.
We have situations now where the creation of refugees is the object of the violent action being taken. And we're often the perpetrators of the violence. If things go wrong, find themselves as refugees. You're not dealing with clear-cut victims and oppressors, but you're dealing with a little bit of both.
Helping refugees is a humanitarian mission, but it has become a mission fraught with moral dilemmas that can no longer be resolved by the political clarities of the Cold War. I'm Ann Cooper reporting.